From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says so everything that goes bump in the night. And currently the winner of the Tuesday Night Wars.
Yeah, you're winning the battle here. Yeah.
And alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-cape-wearing person, my friend, my brother, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count
Panic. Oh, hey, Bob. Yes, another episode.
You're wearing glasses?
What's that?
Are you wearing glasses?
No.
Yes. You're wearing glasses.
Oh, I was trying to get in the spirit of things there, Bob.
Oh, was that your costume?
I can't see anything out of them.
I think they're reading glasses.
They're reading glasses for somebody around here. But and Bob, we'll leave those to the side for
now. Hello, Cow Panic.
Good to see you, Bob.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
How have you been?
I've been doing good, Bob. Of course, the veil, as we speak.
It's thinned, very thinning.
How thin? Okay.
If I was
Where
to,
are we at right now at the veil?
7 dryer sheets.
Okay.
7 dryer sheets thick.
And we're getting down.
We're getting down. Okay. And eventually, in a couple weeks, we'll be down to 1 dryer sheet.
1 dryer sheet.
1 dryer sheet. Awesome. Guys, don't take that as an actual like measurement of paranormal activity. That'd be a little ridiculous. Oh, this haunting is 7 dryer sheets deep.
This veil is that. That should be on a t-shirt.
Veil's thickening and thinning.
But here's the thing. It is thinning. We are in a month of October. A lot of people getting in the swing of things. Now, Bob, I know this is a podcast. All year round.
Yes, all year round. We celebrate Halloween all year round, but this is like our busy time.
A lot of bandwagon and paranormal folks love this time of year.
Exactly. I'll see you guys the first week of November when we come back.
It doesn't end for you.
No, but it's October. You know, last week, normally I'm very ecstatic to do my episodes, but last week it didn't pan out because somebody's birthday fell on a Tuesday.
Your birthday, Bob.
Yeah, it was my birthday. Yeah. So I took the week off.
We're trying to figure out maybe a day for the podcast.
But it happens. But it's okay. Life goes on. We're okay. Yeah. Pick back up, right?
Pick it back up. We're back up here right now.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to?
Bobby.
Weekend update.
Yeah, you know what? It's been, the weather has swiftly changed around here.
Yeah, it hit me hard.
It went from 85 to like 65 in a matter of a day. But we are in those fall temps. It is, I'm not one to complain about that. I like the old slap on the old flannel, slap on the old hoodie and go outside. But yeah, Bob, I mean, the leaves are starting to change. They're starting to fall. It's this weekend, I mean, I know there's a lot of fall activities going on around here.
I've done a couple already.
You did a couple already?
Yeah.
You go apple picking?
I went to the Kenosha Port of Fear Film Festival.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I went to, last week I was at Wendigo Fest.
Yeah, yeah.
This upcoming week, there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. It was a nice transition weekend into fall.
Exactly. And this is my happiest time of year, man.
Most wonderful time of the
year. Especially for us. But it's nice to see you, and it's nice to be here another year older, another year wiser, another year closer to whatever's next.
Birthday, Bob.
Yeah.
I know you never ask a woman her age, but do we ask men their age?
33. I'm a young boy.
Welcome to the club.
Thank you. I know, right?
33.
I got to play disc golf for my birthday, and I went to Olive Garden.
Olive Garden. What does Bob get at Olive Garden?
It's the never-ending pasta bowl. By the way, Olive Garden, if you're listening and you're looking for a paranormal podcast to sponsor, slide into these DMs. They are wide open. You could just pour that Alfredo down my gullet.
So you just get, obviously, it's just a plain Alfredo.
Or the marinara or whatever it might be, yeah.
Meatless, though, yeah.
Meatless, yes, absolutely.
Breadsticks?
Please.
They're never ending, they say.
They're never ending, you see. The breadsticks and the minestrone soup.
I wonder if anybody's ever went to Olive Garden and never stopped eating breadsticks.
Like, you just sit there and open to close?
They're still eating there to this very
day. Well, I mean, they close at a certain point.
I guess you gotta leave it
I don't think there's any 24-hour Olive Gardens out there.
That'd be crazy.
But Olive Garden, you could slide into these DMs. Negotiations are open. I'll work for gift cards.
It's on the table.
It is on the table. I will work for gift cards.
We're going to go into big negotiations.
So side joke real quick here, Cal Panic. We have to have a serious conversation.
Yeah.
You and I are at war against two big companies.
We are. We're wrestling companies, right?
So outside of the world of the paranormal, Count Panic and I are avid professional wrestling fans.
Yeah.
And apparently two of the biggest wrestling companies are now going to be feuding over the Tuesday nights, and they're dubbing it the Tuesday Night Wars. So Count Panic and I are have been secured our Tuesday night spot, but now apparently we're going to be included in this Tuesday night war.
But funny
well.
Enough, I'm wearing the competition's
hoodie. It's fine. So listen,
yeah.
listen.
Yeah.
I know what you guys are thinking out there, you know, the two big companies, AEW and WWE. If you guys are looking for a paranormal podcast to woo over the competition, we're available.
We need to get like an ex-wrestler on the show. I know we're not a wrestling podcast.
We have Steve.
That's true, Steve. I'm talking maybe like The Undertaker, a paranormal wrestler. Get Taker on the show.
I wonder, outside of Steve.
Because Steve doesn't have the paranormal gimmick. Yes.
I get that. But I'm saying, like, outside of, you know, I wonder if there's a wrestler that's really big into the paranormal. Zack Ryder was big into Ghostbusters.
Steve,
I digress.
Maybe Steve knows something.
Well, anyway, so Bob After Dark, we are your weekly-ish paranormal show where we talk about legends, lore, supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, and, of course, Count Panic's favorite pudding flavor.
Oh, Bob, I'm traditionalist. Chocolate pudding. Chocolate pudding.
Yes, that's my jam too. Tapioca though.
Really? Tapioca,
like tapioca
pudding.
That's my jam, man.
That's, you know, I always thought tapioca was only for people of a certain age, but I guess not.
Man, listen, I like tapioca when I was like 5 years
wow.
old. I'd still eat it. If somebody gave me one of them snack packs of tapioca right
you
now,
got
I'd be all about
palate.
It. I guess you could say that.
Yeah.
You know, so Bob After Dark, we split the show up into two parts. First part's the weird, spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, and me, the Bob, go scouring the internet for articles of the unknown, the spooky, the scary, advances in science that borderline on science fiction, ghost stories, whatever it might be. I bring it to you guys. We talk about it, and we, of course, get the hashtag Panic's take because
yeah.
he doesn't know the news articles before we talk about it, so he gives his take on them. So we got that, and then we dive into the lore of the week. And because it's Halloween, it's October, it's the spooky season,
spooky.
We're going to be looking at horror movies
oh.
this month.
Wow.
The movie, the fictional movie,
yeah.
and where it could fall in actual lore.
Interesting.
So we're
going to
be looking at that all this month, all right. and I'm excited to be diving into that topic.
Yeah.
But without further ado, Count of Panic, are you ready for the news?
Let's hear the news, Bob.
The news, he says.
The news.
The news.
Yeah.
Okay. So, oh, you might have heard that in the background. My apologies. So, you want to hear? Oh, that's good to know. So, you want to talk about the news now?
The news.
The news.
Is that the opening of the segment?
Yeah, the news. After 4 years of doing it, eventually I'd get it right and be like, the news, he says. All right, you ready to move on? And
yeah.
let me tell you a story. Okay, yeah. so this one comes to us from Oddity Central, written by... the author always goes by Spooky on that website.
Okay.
That's the admin. But anyway, woman dies after eating chocolate from a fortune teller who predicted her imminent death.
Wow.
A 27-year-old Brazilian woman tragically lost her life after experiencing poisoning symptoms associated with chocolate candy allegedly received from a fortune-telling woman who had allegedly predicted her early death. Fernanda Silva Valos da Cruz Pinto. Fernanda Silva Valos da Cruz Pinto fell ill on August 3rd, experiencing severe stomach pains, vomiting, nosebleeds, and excessive salivation. She was rushed to the Santa Casa de Misericordia hospital, but there was nothing the doctors could do, and she died in the early hours of the following day. According to the initial information provided by her family, Fernanda had told them that she had received chocolate candy from a supposed fortune teller in the center of the city Mahicino, M-A-C-E-I-O, with the little umlaut above it, city, who had also predicted that she would die very soon. Mm. She ate the candy that same very day, then fell ill, and then started experiencing the poison symptoms. Because Fernanda's family had told the doctors that she also suffered from stomach ulcers and gastritis, the symptoms of what can be similar to those of food poisoning, her death was listed as yet to be clarified. However, after the autopsy results showed that the 27-year-old woman had died as a result of poisoning with toxic substances. The family's story about the fortune teller's candy didn't seem that implausible anymore. Soon after the toxicology report came out last week, the Homicide and Personal Protection Police Station, the DHPP, began an investigation into this bizarre case, but the chances of actually finding any new clues are very slim due to the long time gap between Fernanda's death and the investigation. Mm. The unusual story in itself brings some difficulty to the investigations, the DHPP's told journalist. The time interval of almost 2 months had also presented a challenge, as the homicide investigation begins at the scene of the crime, and we were not there. However, we will make every effort to compensate for this loss information and provide a solution to the case. Police sources credited the family for helping shed light on Fernanda's death. As if they were had to bury her 2 months ago, right after the death, without requesting toxicology tests, there wouldn't even have been an investigation. As for the alleged fortune teller who gave the victim chocolate candy and predicted her imminent death, that remains just a theory at this point, as police sources have admitted that identifying the culprit, if there even is one, will be very difficult so long after the woman's death. CCTV surveillance system in that area where they allegedly met no longer have the footage from 2 months ago, and finding eyewitnesses will be difficult. Plus, following the extensive social media coverage around the case, the culprit may have just gone into hiding. And this is the second poisoning case to rock Brazil this year. A few months back, there was a story of a woman who died after eating poison chocolate candy sent by her ex-lover's jealous girlfriend. Hashtag panics take.
Yeah, death by chocolate. Sad stories there, Bob, actually. It's tragic that this happened. But twice it happened over there, but the first one they knew was an ex-lover, I guess. The second one seems a little bit more of a mystery still. I mean, I don't know if they really solved the case there for that. But it is eerie. I do love chocolate, and that kind of makes me terrified to know that people are getting poisoned by chocolate out there. But what do you make of it all? Do you think it was just some hanky-panky or something out there?
Hi. This is a spooky PSA for all of you guys.
Yeah, let's hit it.
Don't be eating random candy you get from strangers, like... Yeah. And that tell you you're going to die immediately?
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
No.
That's a mistake.
Yeah.
Do we have a caller?
Never eat random candy.
Do we have a caller?
We do have a caller.
Take it live.
What? Live?
Live.
All right.
You're on the air, caller.
Hey, take me live, Bob.
John, how are you? Long time no talk.
That's the only way to take me is live. You know, that's the only way. Hey, I know it's a spooky season, But, hey, happy birthday, first of all.
Ah, thank you, John. I appreciate that.
And I had to jump in early today.
You did. You're here early.
Yeah, with this story. So she predicted. I mean, come on. I mean, I'm Polish, but she come on. Let's think about this. Now, I go to a fortune teller. She's going to predict I'm going to die from eating chocolate. Then she gives me chocolate. I die, and they can't fit. They can't put two and two together that...
Some hanky-panky?
This could be a murder... I don't get it.
Of the story here isn't saying that the fortune teller predicted that she was going to die of chocolate. The fortune teller just said that she predicted that she was going to die.
Mm. Oh, okay. Well,
wait a second. That's still fishy.
You're going to die, but let me give you this chocolate as a consolation prize. I don't know. I'm not going to eat the chocolate from the random fortune teller.
And then did you say that they couldn't, she just disappeared? They couldn't find, they don't know the location of her anymore?
From what I'm gathering from the story is the only reason why they knew this was Fernanda probably went to her family and said, I found a psychic. The psychic gave me this reading and said I was going to die, and then I ate some chocolate from her. That's all they have. To be fair, do you know how hard it would be to track down a psychic? They are everywhere these days. I could throw a rock and probably hit somebody that does tarot or something, you know, from the window here. It is extremely common to find them, and it's easy to, you know, have social media pages up, Bob the Psychic. I end up killing somebody with a piece of chocolate. I just delete Bob the Psychic off of online. No one knows I spoke to him, whatever it might be. So, and it's very possible that she could have just came across, you know, a street hustler too, you know, somebody on the street who's like, I will read your cards for you, or I will throw bones for you, whatever it might be. And then she gave her poison chocolate. So that's what I'm going with. I'm going to say it is probably a tough case to crack on trying to find who it is.
I don't go to fortune tellers, but I'm certainly not going to go to a fortune teller and take something that she gives. You know, why would I want to take something, I don't know who the lady is or, what.
That, you are such a dad.
But here, Bob, thank you for coming to see me here. Have a chocolate candy bar on your way out.
John, you are such a dad right now.
And, happy Halloween. Anyway, that's interesting. I'll keep on listening. Happy birthday, brother.
Oh, thank you, Mr. John. I appreciate you.
All right. Good night.
He's not buying it. He says that it's...
He's calling malarkey. John has laid down the gauntlet on the Brazilian police department.
I don't know. Also, it's in a... there's a lot of weird stuff with this story.
Yes.
Sadly.
It's a sad story. Yeah. It's curious.
Yeah, curious.
Did the fortune teller poison her with the chocolate, or did she, was it a coinkadink?
Yeah. A case to be made here.
Yes. Yeah. All right. You ready to move on to the next story?
Sure.
This one comes to us from Sky News.
Sky News.
Sky News. You ready to hear about this one?
I'm sitting down. I'm ready.
Stone Man Willie is a mummified man soon to be buried after 128 years on display in Pennsylvania. The true identity of the man was unknown for many years until now, when his real name was to be inscribed on a tombstone on his grave. Known as Stone Man Willie, the man died in the local jail in 1895, where he suffered from kidney failure after being arrested for pickpocketing. He was accidentally mummified by an undertaker who was experimenting with new embalming techniques, according to the Aumens Funeral Home in Reading, Pennsylvania. Dressed in a suit with a bow tie, Stone Man Willie is displayed in a coffin with a red sash across his chest. His hair and teeth remain intact, and his skin has taken on a leathery appearance. Having given a fake name at the time of his arrest, the man's identity remained unknown for many years, and local officials were unable to contact any relatives. But using historical documents, Stone Man Willie's real name has been identified and will be inscribed at the bottom of his tombstone when his body is buried on October 7th, so just a couple days ago. We don't refer to him as a mummy. We refer to him as our friend Willie, funeral director Kyle Blank Baylor said. He had just been such an icon, such a storied part for not only Reading's past, but certainly its present. The funeral home had petitioned the state for permission to keep the body instead of burying it to monitor the process of the experimental embalming technique. Ahead of the funeral, local residents filed onto the streets to celebrate Reading's 275th anniversary, and Stone Man Willie's coffin was carried onto a motorcycle hearse as a part of the parade for the city. So his name was Stone Man Willie.
Stone Man Willie.
Yep.
What a life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hashtag panic stick.
Well, eventually we all got to be, our final places right there, Bob. But for how many years was that? 125
years.
125 years. Then, after all that time, you're probably sick of being out there. You're like, well, geez, let's get it done with already. So, this is kind of a good moment, I feel like.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Doesn't have to be on display.
I don't need my display. My remains on display, man. So,
you want people coming and look at you at a museum?
No! This is Bob from Bob After Dark. Everybody come, unless somebody does like a Hall of Presidents, right? Like an animatronic me. Oh, welcome to Bob After Dark Museum.
Put you in the Haunted Mansion or something.
Exactly. I don't, first off, I want to be cremated, right? That's my final wishes. I don't need to be put in the ground. I'm good.
I thought buried at sea was what you wanted.
No, national cremation. You go out to the woods and they just torch you in the woods.
Okay, that's
the plan.
I'll make sure that happens.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Count Panic. I'm just saying. So, I don't know, man. I understand the need in museums of displaying dead people. I get that. But, man, I this poor guy, he wasn't a mummy. He was just a dude. Good for that. Undertaker being able to preserve, remains that long, that's pretty impressive.
Salt, right? You gotta do a lot of salt.
I guess.
I know, that's something that they do for food. I don't know how it works for humans as much anymore.
Are you a human preserving expert?
No, I don't know. I don't know much about it, Bob. Well, mummification, right? That was a ancient tool.
Yeah, well, I mean, this guy wasn't mummified, though. I guess he was modern mummified, but no wraps or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And his teeth were still white. Impressive. Yeah. Good for him on getting his final burial, though. Yeah, that's important. Yeah. Everybody deserves to be at peace.
It does. They do.
We have another caller?
We do have another caller.
We'll take it live. We'll caller, you're on the air.
We'll take it live.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen. Bob and the Count, how are you guys doing?
Doing good. How about yourself?
Oh, well, I'm enjoying the show.
Oh, thank you.
I was worried about you, Bob, a couple of weeks there, but happy birthday to you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And like I say, it's an interesting show, and I like to eat chocolate, but as Mom said, don't take candy from strangers.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't eat chocolate from a random fortune teller.
That's your best bet, is not doing that, especially
That's very true, too.
Well, that's why some people are weird about trick-or-treating. They don't want to get candy from strangers.
That's different. I'll eat all the candy in the world from trick-or-treating. And I don't know, maybe I would have eaten the chocolate anyway, I guess.
Well, better you didn't go to that fortune teller.
Well, I don't know. I heard a rumor, though. I mean, for the count that I was in Whiting about a week or so ago and ran into some people. They said Mr. Pierogi was going to go trick or treating.
If Mr. Pierogi comes trick or treating at my house, he gets squat.
Well, you can't do that national character.
I gladly would.
Beloved treasure.
He's a cryptid. He's getting taken out.
Well, he could come to my house. I'm sure I would just scrounge up something. Nothing chocolate, though.
Nothing chocolate. Just maybe some butter, fried butter.
Pour some butter on me or something like that.
Well, I don't think I would do that. But if you run into Mr. Pierogi, tell him Bill said hello.
I certainly will, Bill. Yeah. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I will.
All right, listen, I enjoyed the show. You guys take care.
You too, Bill. Have a good one. Bill, Thanks for calling. Bye. We appreciate callers.
Two folks not taking the candy.
219-845-1100. Do you take the candy?
No.
We want to hear your answer. 219-845-1100. Call in. Would you eat the candy from the random psychic?
Would you?
All right. Last news story comes to us from our old pal Tim Banal. My New Year's resolution next year is not to use many articles from the guy, but man, he just does such a good job with these articles. Anyway, Florida teacher under fire for showing the Winnie the Pooh horror film to fourth graders.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Keep up, okay?
Yeah.
A teacher in Florida is under fire for screening an unsettling horror film featuring Winnie the Pooh to a class of his fourth graders. The troubling incident reportedly occurred last Monday at the Academy of Innovative Education in the city of Miami Springs. While the name of the school may seem to suggest that they take an outside-the-box approach to learning, one imagines that an unorthodox screening was not what the parents had in mind when they enrolled their children at the charter school. The film in question was inexplicitly shown to a math class was Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, wherein the titular character, and his equally sinister sidekick, Piglet, become feral and bloodthirsty murderers.
Horrible.
Sorry for laughing. All right, serious reporter here. Expressing outrage from the ill-advised screening, parent Michelle Diaz laminated that her twins were, and I quote, exposed to the slasher film for approximately 30 minutes before an unnamed teacher finally turned it off at the best of the frightened students. Compounding her consternation, she said, was that the math instructor initially didn't stop the movie, even though there were kids saying, hey, stop the movie, we don't want to watch this. As for how highly inappropriate the film, which is not even rated, wound up being shown to fourth graders in the first place, Diaz explained that the teacher actually blamed the students, indicating that they chose the particular movie for class. Understandably, Diaz dismissed the teacher's attempt at passing the proverbial buck, arguing that it's up to the professor to look at the content of any of the films that might be shown in class. In response to the controversy, the Academy of Innovative Education issued a statement wherein they acknowledged that the movie was not suitable for the age group and assured parents that they have addressed the issue directly with the teacher, while also meeting with, and I quote, those students who have expressed concerns. Oddly enough, a same incident occurred at a Dutch elementary school last December where an instructor was fired for showing The Exorcist and other horror films to classics to a class of youngsters. I have an amazing opinion on this, but I'm not the one that you need to be asking. It's the hashtag panics take.
Here's the thing. Okay, I don't know what about that other story because, like, you know what The Exorcist is and you know it's bad. To show kids. This one, maybe there was some confusion, though. I mean, Winnie the Pooh, when you see Winnie the Pooh, you think it's a beloved character.
Okay, let's...
And then you get confused, and then
Could I pause this?
Yeah,
for,
go ahead and pause.
Have you seen the new movie yet?
I haven't seen the Winnie the Pooh film.
Okay, I just needed to ask
Where do you
question.
Even find that ad there?
I'm assuming it's streaming on something. I will look that up while you finish your take.
Because Winnie the Pooh now entered the public domain. So
that's how this movie was made, yes.
That's how it was made, of course. But I could see some confusion. Maybe a teacher just picked up, hey... Winnie the Pooh, they're like, I gotta show my kids Winnie the Pooh because Winnie the Pooh's a wholesome character. But then they put this on and it's just a terrifying movie with a bunch of maniacs in it.
Peacock, by the way.
Peacock. For that teacher, I might give the benefit of the doubt here. The other teacher that was just showing The Exorcist and other scary movies, well, they knew what they were doing, I think, with that. But do you think it was just a little bit of confusion on the teacher's part?
Oh, no.
No?
The movie's called Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
Well, maybe they didn't see the tagline. Winnie the Pooh.
All right, I'm going to pull it back up because admittedly, I haven't seen the movie. No. I don't think I will. It's not my cup of tea, right? I can understand why somebody would make the movie. I applaud them for cashing in on the public domain. Panic, there is no way. No way that if you look at this cover of this movie where there is an image of Winnie the Pooh carrying what looks like a sledgehammer, and it says, this ain't no bedtime story. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. Big letter.
Yeah, but what did the teacher just, I don't know. I'm trying to.
How do you just, maybe if you turn it on Peacock, but even still, it'll pop up horror, you know?
I guess. And once you see the first moments of it, you probably turn it right off. So the teacher's just being devious is what you're thinking.
Do you want my opinion?
What's your opinion?
Look, I am not a prude, as all of you guys probably know. I grew up on horror films from a very young age. I would say I grew up to be a very productive member of society, even though I grew up with these pretty rough horror films of my life. That's fine. Does the teacher show it in the public school? I believe there's more tamer horror films to be seen, you know, like you look at the classic Universal, you know, horror movie, monster movies like Dracula or Nosferatu or Frankenstein, whatever it might be. Those are probably a little bit more suitable to show kids like those kind of horror films. Diving right into what I'm assuming is a pretty rough horror movie to get through without a permission slip from parents. I don't know what the teacher was expecting.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah, now keep in mind, there are some, I'm not going to name the movie just for sake of argument here, but there are movies that I watched in school that I had to get a permission slip signed to watch. But my parents always, go watch it so you learn something about the world, right? So I would watch it and I'd have the permission slip so I'd go and see the stuff. But not everybody grew up in the very similar circumstances I did. Heck, the Queen of the Night even had a horror movie class where she went to high school at her artsy school. So, I mean, those things exist.
Yeah.
But not everybody grows up in the same regard as I did. You know, there are more protective parents over their kids, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, I'm not one to judge somebody on their parenting style by any means. Whatever works for you is going to work for you. So if you, or somebody who might be highly religious, right? That ain't going to work for them. If you sit down, you're like, let's watch Winnie the Pooh, you know, I guess. the horror
That's
film.
The thing, yeah.
I don't know, man. I would just say, I get it. It wouldn't bother me, but I could see why this would be a problem for other ones. If of you're course. Going to show a horror film near class and you're not, The teacher can't say I didn't know what was going on.
No.
I there's no world where I believe that teacher didn't know what was going on. And fourth graders, what's the average age of a fourth grader? Like 8, 9 years old?
Yeah. Somewhere around there.
Man, that's... Give that teacher some kind of credit. You had some guts doing that. But if you didn't think there was going to be any backfire from this, you're insane. send the permission slip out.
Permission slip.
Permission slip is all it takes. Yeah. You know, if you know, group of parents are like, yeah, go watch the Winnie the Pooh horror film. You know, it's that's on them. My mom would have signed it for me.
Okay, come on, man.
My mom wouldn't have cared. She would have been like, oh yeah, go do that. Yeah. Go get it out of your
system.
Watch
the movie.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Go send home some permission slips. That way there you could cover yourself. And you could say, this movie shows graphic death, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. If you're going to show a horror movie to a bunch of kids, pick out something maybe a little bit more classy.
Yeah, just
nothing wrong with Winnie the Pooh, but I don't know, man.
Too advanced.
Too advanced, I'd say. So anyway, don't show the movie is what you're saying. Are you with me on the permission slip? Are you saying that just doesn't belong there
at all?
I don't
know. I don't think it's going to work out, Bob. That's I don't think your tactic works out here.
Hey, that's fair. I anyway, I got to laugh at the story.
Well, does this make you want to watch the movie, though?
I don't see a problem with it.
Like, would you be someone you'd be...
like, as if I was a parent? Or are you telling me, like, now
right
as...
now, just you. Would you want to watch it?
Probably not. No? It's I love horror films, by the way, which is exactly what we're doing
all
this month.
Here,
but,
yeah.
Like, I don't know, man. You dive into the public domain. I get why they did it. But certain things to me, like, I wouldn't watch, you know, it was a beloved childhood thing for me, like, in a twisted thing. Winnie the Pooh, not for me so much, yeah. But my sister was really into it, so I grew up with that, like, imagery. I wouldn't watch it just so I'm not ruining it, but somebody who might not have cared for the independent property, the IP then,
yeah,
you know, maybe, and if they're into it, dude, all the more power to you. I'm happy for you. But for me, probably not the thing.
Skip it.
Skip it for me. But yeah. I'm not saying anything bad about the movie. Go watch it if that's your cup of tea, right?
Yeah.
You ready to take a quick break, Count?
Sure.
All right, live fans, stick around. We'll be right back. And to our podcast fans, you're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
And we're back. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey there, Bob.
What's going on?
What did you do
during break?
You were going to ask me what I did during the break.
I always ask
during
you
the break. I watched a new Winnie the Pooh horror movie.
Ah, what did you think?
A little too graphic.
For fourth graders.
What Tigger did in the second act was horrible. I don't want kids to see that. So.
I was going to say, are you a squeamish vampire? How's that work?
The sight of blood makes me unnerved, yes.
That's fair. You know what I did during break?
What'd you do during break?
You know, I learned a jump rope song.
Yeah?
Would you like me to read it to you?
Sure.
1, 2, Freddy's coming for you.
Heard this before.
3, 4, better lock your door.
I heard this.
5, 6, grab your crucifix.
Yeah.
7, 8, better stay up late. 9, 10, Freddy's gonna come again. You ever heard that one before?
That rings a bell.
That rings a bell. It's from an extremely stupidly popular horror movie by the name of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, mega movie.
Mega movie.
Mega franchise.
It spawned 9 films in the franchise.
Amazing.
8 or 9, plus a TV series.
Yeah.
An immense amount of merch, plus a TV series. There was the Nightmare on Elm Street TV show, and you could call a 1-800 number back in the day, and you could have Freddie Mercury. Jeez. Freddy Krueger call you on your... You could call Freddy Krueger, and he would talk to you.
Scary.
Are you a fan of the movie franchise?
I am. It's not my favorite horror franchise.
Is your favorite horror franchise?
I think the Halloween franchise.
I go 1 and 2. 3 is amazing. After that, it's just garbage.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of a gems in there sometimes at the end of the day. But Nightmare on Elm Street, right up there, dog. Great horror franchise. Freddy, out of all those like slasher folks, Freddy had the most character out of all of them. That's for sure.
You know what? You look at other horror films, and it was never the same actor portraying every movie.
No.
You know, sometimes there was, you know, a different actor behind the mask. You know, there were several, you know, Jason Voorheeses and several Michael Myers, et cetera, et cetera. But our boy Robert Englund played Freddy Krueger all throughout the series, with the exception of the reboot.
And, I mean, just he was, I mean, is there anybody else besides him that can play the character?
The guy who they had playing in the reboot, he was the guy who played Rorschach in Watchmen.
From Watchmen,
Yeah, he did a good job. I actually really liked that movie.
Yeah.
It was a decent flick.
Well, when you talk about legendary roles, I mean, your mind goes first, Robert, there, as far as his portrayal of Freddy. It was terrifying. That movie made people stay up at night.
Yes.
They couldn't get sleep.
You could tell. So you look at the concept of Freddy Krueger, right? And it is definitely a weird, scary horror film. It's about this guy who invades your dreams. And you might be wondering, why am I still talking about this after the bit of coming back from the break? But tonight, to kick off the horror movie month, we are talking about Nightmare on Elm Street and Freddy Krueger. And there is a lovely legend that says Nightmare on Elm Street was based on a true story.
Really?
Not necessarily a guy popping out of dreams to kill people, but, you know, was there an actual Freddy Krueger? Let me get your opinion on that real quick, Kyle, because I have a fan messaging me about a link. So,
okay.
Yeah, go on. Tell me
There was a real Freddy Krueger?
Well, no. Well, what was your experience with Freddy Krueger in your day?
Well, I never ran into him personally in my dreams.
No, but did you ever watch the movies?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, what was your earliest thing? Was he a scary character for you?
Yeah, you know, as a kid, I mean, those movies were, you know, kind of formed, what, in the 80s more so? I know Halloween was late 70s, but a lot of those characters got really established. Those slasher films were from the 80s, where you had Freddy, Michael Myers, Jason, and Scream, the Ghostface came along. Chucky was a big deal back then, too, and so on and so forth. But, you know, like I said, Freddy always, it was kind of terrifying because he had the face. The face was horrible, the disfigured face. He had the razor-sharp claws that just got you. I mean, at any point in time, he didn't need an axe. He didn't need a knife. Because his hands were literally, Bob, deadly
razor
weapons.
Blades. Yep.
Deadly weapons.
So let's read an article, and we're going to sit down, and we're going to dissect this.
We are sitting.
And at the end of it, I'm going to give you guys some actual lore on some creatures that may or may not invade your dreams. This probably isn't the easiest episode for my little ones, the little Bob After Dark fans.
They'll be up all night.
They'll be up all night. So parents, I'm warning you now, this one might be a little bit more scary. You know, my normal episodes, I get it. You know, I do have this thing where I talk about scary things, but this might be one of the scarier ones. So viewer discretion's advised, or listener discretion is advised.
Okay. Thank you for that.
All right. So, yeah, of course. So you get a chance. You can go back and listen to any of my other episodes in the meantime. Anyway, so this one comes to us from Collider, and it was written by Riley Presnell. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so everyone's favorite striped sweater wearing knife glove slasher may have actually been based on a true story. That's right, Freddy Krueger from A Nightmare on Elm Street was inspired by a real life story, not entirely just made up by Wes Craven. Just when you thought the concept of Freddy infiltrating your nightmares and killing you in torturous ways couldn't be scarier, there seemingly was a dream killer wreaking havoc in the 1980s. A Nightmare on Elm Street is about a group of Midwestern teenagers who are all experiencing the same nightmarish fate, a man by the name of Freddy Krueger who preys on them in their sleep. Krueger is a badly burned boogeyman who kills people in their dreams, which manifests into their deaths in real life. The only way to avoid falling victim to Krueger is to stay awake at any cost, otherwise, 1-2, Freddy's coming for you. There are 8 movies in the franchise, which includes one mashup of worlds, Freddy vs. Jason, and there's also a 2010 remake, A Nightmare on Elm Street, but we can't let the remake die in our sleep. Because of the success of the franchise, there's also a 4-hour documentary titled Never Sleep Again, The Elm Street Legacy, which, by the way, is really good. And there's also a TV series titled Freddy's Nightmare and almost a Fear Factor-style reality show with Freddy Krueger as the host titled Real Nightmares. The legacy of Freddy Krueger is one of the most popular in the history of horror, and all legacies never die. So, did the sarcastic and sadistic child murder come to fruition? The LA Times can be thanked for that. Surprisingly enough, Craven started writing horror scripts without ever seeing a horror film first. In A Vulture's Oral History of A Nightmare on Elm Street, Craven said that he was struck with inspiration for the Dream Killer when he found an article in the LA Times. The article was about a Cambodian family coming to America to escape mass genocide in the killing fields. They made it to the United States and all was fine until the young boy in the family was terrified to sleep because he felt that if he slept, he would be killed by somebody chasing him. He forced himself to stay awake for days at a time, and eventually he died in the middle of a nightmare. This became the basis of it for Nightmare on Elm Street. Craven told Cinefantastique magazine that it also wasn't the only article he saw. There were three articles about unexplained deaths of those from Laos, Cambodia. None of the articles connected the deaths together, even though they were all eerily similar. The last of the men dying in their sleep was found with a Mr. Coffee Maker in his closet and discarded sleeping pills that he never took. This isn't the first case of Southeast Asia refugees dying in their sleep, however. Many young men in the country of Laos were falling asleep to their deaths due to fatal ailment. This was eventually named Sudden Unexplained Nocturnal Death Syndrome, or SUNDS. The ailment affected young men between the ages of 20 and 30 from the ethnic groups who were persecuted in Laos after they were recruited by the CIA and agreed to fight the North Vietnamese and the Vietnam War. Between 1978 and 1981, there were 13 nocturnal deaths of the young men recorded. According to the LA Times, 98% of these deaths occurred between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. During the year 1981, 26 total men died from the same reason. Many victims were found dead, but if medics arrived in time, the men found their hearts contracting obscenely fast. There had been a lot of speculation on what could possibly be causing the SUNDS. Some doctors suspected poor diet, as longer the refugees were living away from the camps on the killing fields, the more likely they were to live. Others suspected that it could be due to the exposure of the chemical nerve agents during the Vietnam War, but that was quickly dispelled. In an LA Times article, a medical examiner mentioned that if there was a chemical agent, it doesn't make sense that it would affect only men during a specific time frame in the evening. Some members of this group felt that they were being punished by spirits for leaving and abandoning their homelands, and the SUNDS is still unexplained to this day. Craven took the idea to Hollywood and was largely turned down by many directors and production studios, including Universal Studios. In Vulture's Oral History, A Nightmare on Elm Street, Craven admits that he had a rejection letter from Universal hanging on his wall. Many deterred Craven from wanting to make this film because the basis of the plot. Many warned him that it wouldn't be accepted because, yes, while everyone has nightmares, everyone eventually wakes up from them without being attacked by a finger-knifed maniac. Bob Shea, the eventual producer on A Nightmare on Elm Street, felt differently. He met Craven and told him he loved it, and they set a budget for $700,000, which, by the way, guys, in horror movie money, that's not a lot. That's a shoestring budget. And the movie looks great for a $700,000 budget. Yeah. That's seriously. This was mainly fueled by a Yugoslavian man who wanted to give wanted his girlfriend to be in the movie. Freddy's iconic red and green sweater was a necessity because Craven had read a Scientific American article that stated that red and green together is the most difficult combination for the human eyes to see together,
really?
Which is fascinating.
I didn't know that fact. Yeah. Like Christmas.
Yeah. He also wanted those to be Freddy's signature colors and a way to recognize him immediately since he is a shapeshifter. This is seen at the end of the original Nightmare on Elm Street, when the kids drive off in the convertible and the roof is red and green stripes, signifying that he may be the end of those kids. A very real, unexplained phenomenon inspired one of the most important and successful horror icon franchises. And it is, lives on in infamy from here until the end of times.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, too, with the sweater. That is a fascinating fact about the sweater, though. I didn't know that. So they're saying it, the eyes, it's difficult to see that together.
Yes, apparently it's according to the whatever research Wes Craven did, that's the hardest color combo to spot together.
Amazing. That's research right there.
Yes. So, Now, over the years, a lot of people believe that Freddy Krueger, you hear this concept that it was based on a true story.
Yeah.
So there has been many urban legends saying, was Freddy Krueger a real guy?
Had to be.
Other than, you know, the Cambodian deaths that were going on, this was a, you know, there was a big, big thing going around saying that Freddy Krueger was based on a 19th century serial killer. And I came here to pop that balloon for all
You're
of you.
You're popping the balloon?
Popping the balloon. Oh, so nice. This was, I found a USA Today article that written by Devon Link, or Devon Link. Fact check. No, Freddy Krueger was not a real 19th century serial killer. But again, you know, speculation grows insanely over years, right? It's like, so they hear that it was based on a true story. So then the next person's like, oh yeah, I heard it was a serial killer. They might not have actually heard that. But over time, you spread that, you know, you spread that rumor and the rumor grows and grows and grows. And then eventually you're telling that to people just to scare them, right? You know, was Freddy Krueger an actual guy? Yeah. So here's an article bursting that bubble. Let's talk about it. So, claim Freddy Krueger from Nightmare on Elm Street was inspired by a real serial killer. We might be months away from Halloween. This was written a while ago, but I'm reading it word for word. Away from Halloween, but that won't stop the internet from trying to scare you. A social media legend is claiming that horror protagonist Freddy Krueger was once a real man. I would not call Freddy Krueger a protagonist. Let me poke a hole in that real quick here, guy. Freddy Krueger is an antagonist that through and through. But anyway, Krueger is the villain in the 1984 horror film The Nightmare on Elm Street, a child murderer's terrifying spirit that haunts teenagers' dreams. After inspiring a five film series and several spinoffs, the Krueger character has become famous for his fedora, claws, and burnt skin. Did you know that the horror character Freddy Krueger was based on a real-life serial killer who lived in Lightning Creek, Oklahoma in the 1800s? Michael Ferris posted on Facebook on July 2nd. Later, the town moved and became Alloue, Oklahoma. The post then shares eerie details of child murders, factory fires, and haunted ghost towns alongside a mysterious photo of a dark figure lurking behind three oblivious toddlers. The legend, which was debunked by Snopes. Yeah,
but Snopes, and sometimes they say Snopes is not factual too. So
in October of 2017, in PolitiFact in September 2019, and has evolved into a rendition of a 2017 Halloween prank. In much shorter October 2017 Facebook post, Lamar Foster told his followers about the real serial killer along the photo of a gravestone inscribed Frederick Krueger. Foster recounted the legend of an 1800 serial killer who allegedly inspired the iconic character before disclosing the post was a holiday joke. Actually, I found the picture and made that all up. Happy Halloween, everybody. Foster wrote at the end of his post, which received thousands and thousands and thousands of shares and comments, and the legend has evolved over time. Foster's original post shares several themes, with the longer version fair shared in July. In both posts, the fictional character had a similar death count, weapon choice, crime scene, and punishment. They differ in location, photo, and detail, and disclaimer. Foster's account was of the legend took place in Cincinnati, where he appears to reside. Other tellings have the legend moved to Brooklyn or Buffalo, New York. The latest version of the post is accompanied by an old photo of a man in a fedora lurking behind several children as they pose for a photo. Reverse search of the image shows that it's appeared on a paranormal theory websites and creepypastas in various contexts for more than a decade. So no Krueger there, folks. The most glaring difference between the two posts is that Ferris does not disclose the legend is untrue, where the other guy went back and said, yeah, it's totally a joke. Ferris' version of the legend has unique details about how Krueger has haunted towns and has been killing children from beyond the grave. But shortly after his death, a string of unexpected deaths occurred involving young teenagers and children while they were sleeping in their beds. Before they died, a few parents said that their children would wake up in the middle of the night from night terrors to what they called a burned, scary old man with a claw was trying to kill them and refused to go back to sleep, claims Ferris's post. Doesn't that sound familiar? Lightning Creek in Old Alloue, Oklahoma, since become ghost towns where all the residents have moved moved away long ago in fear that it was haunted by his ghost, it continues. Lightning Creek residents changed the town's name to Alue in 1883 after the United States Army Corps of Engineers bought the land to build Oogaloo Lake in the 1950s, and the town was moved and renamed New Alue. The town is established to have lost half of its population during the 1957 move, and it is inhabited by 90 people in 2010. The city refers to an area that was formerly where Lightning Creek once stood, and Lightning Creek is still not inhabited because it's been replaced with a lake, not due to a haunting. In a 2017 or 2014 interview with Vulture, a Nightmare on Elm Street director and writer, Wes Craven, said he came up with the idea for Freddy Krueger's death after reading an LA Times article about, you know, the Cambodia things. Not a serial killer named Frederick Krueger that was killing people in Oklahoma, Buffalo, New
That's
York,
a little different, yeah.
Cincinnati.
Yeah.
The social media, and this is, you know, the rating is false. The social media legend claiming that a Nightmare on Elm Street character, Freddy Krueger, was once a real serial killer stems from a 2017 Halloween prank. The story has evolved over the past several years to offer new details relevant to different areas and lost its original prank disclaimer. A Nightmare on Elm Street creator, Wes Craven, said in a news article, inspired Krueger, not a real serial killer. And he even said the claim was false. So Freddy Krueger, not a real guy.
For now, that we know.
That we know of.
It could be a real guy out there. People probably have the names, though, right? There's got to be some.
If my last name was Krueger, right? And my parents named me Freddy. First off, I think that'd be really cool. But I digress. I don't know.
There's probably been a lot of them before the movies were actually made, too. Just an unfortunate name, I guess, you have. Or a very cool name to have as well. So not a real guy. We're pinpointing this right here.
No. So that's the story. There's no Freddy Krueger. It's not based on a real story. There was people from Cambodia dying from this real strange sleep thing. Yeah. And they weren't, you know, it still remains a mystery. How did they die? They felt like somebody was being chased. That's how Wes Craven came up with the concept. You know, it's still a terrifying story of a real thing that happened, but the concept of an actual real-life Freddy Krueger, no one's to say that there's not, you know, a horrible person. There's been serial killers, you know, throughout time, especially since we've had modern media to be able to report on it. Serial killers have been around forever.
Yeah.
So there's no, I'm not sitting here telling you that serial killers aren't real. I'm not telling you that there wasn't specifically a child serial killer that, you know, did these horrible things to children. I'm just saying that it didn't inspire a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Totally original. And nobody had that sweater before Freddy. Probably had that sweater too.
I mean, if you go to the Christmas aisle.
It's very traditional. But you know what? It did make you... I mean, it is terrifying. Okay, so the thing with Freddy, right? You got to be asleep for him to get you.
Yes.
But it's impossible to stay up forever. So a lot of people just say, well, I'll just stay up. That's how he won't get to me. But eventually, you have to go to sleep.
Now, count panic.
Yeah,
do you think I'd leave you here without something to actually terrify you?
Like if I fell asleep?
Well, I'm telling you in general. What if I told you that I have a story of an actual creature
really
that eats people, can kill people from their dreams?
All right. Well, let's hear it.
All right. Remember what we talked about, the yokai, right?
Yokai, yeah.
Yokai, the Japanese paranormal stories. Mm-hmm. Yokai are a very big characteristic. So here in America, we have ghosts, we have cryptids, we have demons, we have deities, blah, blah, blah. In Japan, they just have yokai. And the yokai kind of fall into these different categories. We've talked about a couple, Kuchisaki Yona, the woman who smiles, or we've talked about the Tengu, the warbird. Tonight, in honor of Freddy Krueger, we're looking at the Baku, the legendary dream-eating monster of Japanese mythology. Shout out to Ancient Origins for this article, by the way. Mm-hmm. The Baku, otherwise known as the Dream Eater, is a creature in Chinese and Japanese folklore, which is said to devour nightmares. The Baku cannot be summoned without caution, however, as legend has it that if the Baku is not satisfied after consuming said nightmare, he may also devour one's hopes and dreams, causing somebody to die. Let's kill
it. Terrified already.
Yes. Yeah. Tales of the Baku, or devouring nightmares, actually originated in Chinese folklore. The Chinese mythology had a tradition of hybrid monsters created from parts of several animals. The Quadrupede Mo, or just the Mo, of Chinese mythology was a fantastical monster made up of tiger paws, a cow tail, rhinoceros eyes, and an elephant trunk. The 9th century poet Bai Bo Joy popularized the idea that drawings of this hybrid beast could ward off sickness and evil. It was only later, between the 14th and 15th centuries, that the mythological being appeared in Japan during what is now known as the Muromachi period. There are several stories of the powers of the mythological creature. While the Chinese Mo powers were more apotropic, the Japanese Baku was imbued with the ability to fend off nightmares. While the Baku was deemed to be a spiritual being, it was well-defined appearance. The Baku was a chimera, a mythical beast comprised of various parts from other animals, typically depicted with a bear's body, an elephant's trunk, a tiger's paw, an oxen tail, and rhinoceros ears or eyes. According to Japanese legends, the Baku was created by spare pieces that were left over when the gods finished creating all the other animals. Depictions and beliefs in the Baku have changed throughout the years. In ancient Chinese legend, the Mo was an animal that was hunted for its pelt. Whoever killed a Mo would use a blanket made from the pelt as a talisman or an object with magical powers, which would protect them from evil spirits. The practice evolved over time, and soon the pelt was no longer necessary, but an image of the beast was thought to have the power to repel evil spirits. It wasn't until the Baku legends made their way to Japan that the beast was considered a dream eater with the power to consume and chase away nightmares. Over time, the custom of using amulets with the power to consume and chase away amulets to stave off unwanted nightmares developed. Those beliefs have continued to this day, and Japanese folklore claims that suffering from bad dreams should call out to a Baku for help. By the turn of the 20th century, it was common for children in Japan to sleep with a Baku talisman by their bed. Children suffering from nightmares were told to wake up and repeat the following phrase 3 times. Baku-san, come eat my dream. Baku-san, come eat my dream. Baku-san, come eat my dream. On speaking these words, the Baku was believed to enter the children's room and devour the bad dream, allowing the child to go back to sleep. The Baku were also summoned for protection from bad dreams prior to falling asleep at night, and to this day remains common for Japanese children to keep Baku talisman in their bedside. However, the myths also stress the need for caution. Should a Baku remain hungry after consuming unwanted nightmares, it was believed that he then can continue to munch away, devouring a person's hopes and dreams as well. And that effect would cause a person to be living an empty, unfulfilling life and would drive them to madness or death. Today, you can find several modern representations of the Baku, including Japanese comics. Occasionally, a Baku is shown in the form of represents a tapir, as opposed to the traditional chimera form. In reality, the Japanese for a Baku is always the same as an Asian tapir. Some academics have hypothesized that the mythological creature was inspired by a now extinct species very similar to the Asia tapir. By the way, that is the same creature that the Pokemon Hypno and Drowsy were based off of, in case anybody was curious. In 1984, there is a film by the name of Beautiful Dreamer, which depicted a Baku, and later the Baku took on the form of a Pokemon in the Drowsy and Hypno and various other ones. So there is a creature, several creatures in the mythos of dreaming that can, totally kill you from your dreams, the Baku being one of them. Mm. So
the Baku.
Freddy Krueger, not so much. The Baku, totally plausible.
So you're saying I shouldn't go to bed tonight because of the Baku?
Just don't go to bed, guys. That's my answer. What? Don't sleep.
Well, that's, you never know what's going to happen. That kind of turns back to Freddy, though. I mean, that's the point. You can't get you when you sleep. So, I mean, that's the secret, just staying up all the time. The rest of your life, you got to stay up.
Yes.
And you won't die.
Yes. So,
Baku. I got to worry about the Baku.
Got to be aware of the Baku.
Okay.
So, Count Panic, what'd you think of the stories tonight? What'd you think of Freddy Krueger?
Well, listen, it's a historic figure. Go down in the history. I'm sure they're not done, Bob. I'm sure there's more.
Robert Englund is done with the role.
He's done. But that doesn't mean the franchise.
We had that remake in, 2010, 2011. We never saw him since.
Yeah.
There was always talks of the Freddy versus Jason sequel. There was always talks of the Freddy versus Jason versus Ash. In today's world of social media, I would like to see a Freddy Krueger type character that lurks on the internet and can attack you by opening an email.
You
could
make
something.
That movie, Bob.
I would. That would be something I would do.
They could do the son of Freddy.
Exactly. And instead of haunting your dreams, he haunts your emails or he haunts your instant messages.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's probably a good story, but yeah.
Yeah, puts you in that mood to watch.
A total Mount Rushmore of horror figures, though. If I was to make a Rushmore of slasher villains, you would have Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, Chucky the Killer Doll, and
gotta be Michael, right?
Michael Myers.
Gotta be Michael Myers, right?
Yeah,
I think Michael, Freddy, Jason. I don't know if I would have Chucky or a Ghostface from Scream.
The problem with Ghostface is it's a different Ghostface to every movie.
Yeah.
Out of the six Scream movies, right. I haven't seen the newest one yet. Don't spoil it for me. But it's been different people the entire time. So that's why I wouldn't put Ghostface on my horror
Chucky's
Mount Rushmore.
One, yeah.
Chucky.
You think you could defeat Chucky easily, right? Because he's just a doll.
You say that. I'm done. No more.
You kick him or something. Like that.
You said that,
you
not
hate,
me.
You
I
hate
I ain't about that life,
you
guys.
Hate dolls. Yeah. Well. I don't know. Sure, listen, I talk all about this now, but if he showed up right now,
I'm out. Yeah, I'm gone. Yeah. I'm kicking down that window and I'm out,
the, out
door.
The door.
I'm gone.
Right. Yeah.
You could deal with
sweet dreams, I guess, Bob.
You know, if Freddy Krueger made an appearance, I'd fight Freddy Krueger for you.
You would?
I would fight Michael Myers for you, Count Panic. I would not fight Chucky the Killer Doll. I'd be going straight to Ben's house.
What's your tactic,
Dr. Ben Vanderson?
What's your tactic to face Michael Myers? Or
Michael Myers is a man. Shoot him in the head.
But he always gets up anyway.
In the head.
Those movies at
the end. I gotta stop those sequels real quick.
Those movies at the end got really crazy.
Oh my God. There are people. Never mind. This isn't a horror movie podcast.
Freddy.
Maybe. Freddy Krueger, on the other hand, yeah. I got a plan.
Yeah.
I got a plan.
You got a plan?
I got a plan. I'm gonna fight him in my dreams.
Well, that's the only place you could find him, right?
Exactly.
Or you could bring him out here, right? Can't you?
That's what Nancy did at the end of the first
one.
Yeah,
you just brought him out here and then take care of him. Yeah.
Do you have any closing words for our audience tonight, Count Panic?
Well, sweet dreams once again to everybody out there. And, good night.
Hopefully you guys get some sleep.
This is not the best episode to listen before your bed.
It's the best episode, too.
Okay.
All right, folks. Thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panic, we just want to wish you guys sweet dreams. To Mom, good night. Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy and comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And to Tiff, no matter where you are, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.